Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. I am your host, Clay, and we got a little bit of a week, a little bit of a non-week. You know, I definitely missed the ball on reading one of our books, but my great co-host, Mark, you know, he picks up the ball when I drop it. For sure.
Well, that's, you know, I feel like I need to pick up the slack since it feels like I'm always on a vacation every 3 months.
You know, but speaking of vacation, in another 2 months, we're all going on vacation.
Yeah. Oh, so you're doing it?
Yeah.
Like, this is legit?
This is legit. Me and my wife are talking right now. It was really weird because as soon as I said it, she's like, we're going to Florida? And I was like, well, I am. And she's like, okay, are we going to Disney again? I was like, well, this is for a convention, so if you go, you'll have to, like, just, like, find something to do. And she's like, okay, I'm gonna go invite my friend. And so she, like, called her friend up with her friend has a son who just recently had a birthday party. We went to Dallas for it. And she's like, hey, so Clay's going to Florida, and I really want to go, and if you can go, we can all go to Disney World while he goes to the convention, and it'll be fun. And I was like, oh, well, this turned into a much bigger expense than I thought it was going to be. But then after, since that day that we had talked, me and you, she has been kind of contemplating and thinking some things up, and so they have decided that they're going to go on a road trip this summer, so they're going to postpone the Orlando thing, and so I'll be going by myself, and then I'll meet you and Jake there. So that's
awesome. And what Clay is mentioning is I posted it on Twitter, which is, for the last 3 years as Nation of Nerds, I've always been invited, and Leo and Hiram and the crew, as press for MegaCon Orlando, but since we have, you know, change things up to Comic Book Legion, you know, I figured, I'm like, oh man, it's much different because Hiram and Leo live in Florida. This is, I got Clay lives in Texas. I mean, for me, it doesn't matter because my family lives like 2 hours from Orlando, so I can know it's always a good reason to visit them.
Yeah.
But then we got like this gold horse where even Jake, the beekeeper, well, now he's like the roof keeper. But Jake from Nerdground, he's going to actually be traveling from California all the way to Orlando. So it's cool because none of us have ever met each other in person. This is all, you know, via Google Hangout.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a lot of fun being able to nerd out on something that we all collectively like.
And this will be my first trip out of state by myself.
You're a man.
I'm
you're wearing that Superman shirt.
I'm a man.
You're a man. I'm 40.
Well, no. You know, see, no. Well, I was looking at trips, and I was like, okay, I want to make this as cheap as possible. So, in San Antonio, I don't know why, but Wednesday is like a high traffic day for the airport. So, I'm having to drive to Austin, get it on a plane there to make it cheaper. Now, unfortunately,
life hack when it comes to buying airplane tickets, since you are a night owl, close to a vampire,
late nights.
Tuesdays at midnight.
Oh, really?
There's kind of like Black Friday sales on airline tickets.
That is good to know. I will definitely look. Now, I have a limited amount of like time off at my job. So, if I can find a flight that is, like, really late on Tuesday night.
Red eye.
Yeah, like, really late, I will go, like, right after work onto the flight, and then boom. That would be awesome. That would be genuinely awesome. So, that way, because, I mean, I was able to get it as low as, like, a round trip there and back for, like, $160.
Well, you're not going to find cheaper than that. Like, round trip to go to Florida, like Orlando, and back for $160. Like, you should just pounce on that now.
Yeah, no, I have to get on a plane in Austin, at 8 o'clock. I'll get into Florida at midnight. And then on Sunday, I'll basically miss the last day of the convention.
Oh, but that's fine. I never go on Sunday, especially because since I'm driving, I mean, I'm going to be, I have a 7 hour, 8 hour drive ahead of me. So I usually
Well,
leave.
Maybe we should tell Jake that. So that way he's not just like hanging out. I mean, if he wants to hang out in Florida by himself, that's cool, but we should probably plan that out a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll let him know that because, yeah, because usually on Saturday, what I do.
The flight on Sunday leaves at like 7 a.m. and I'll get back at like 9 or 10. Time
yeah.
traveling.
Yeah, Saturday, like this past year on Saturday, I was only there for maybe till like 1 or 2 because I wanted to be at one of the panels.
Yeah.
So my thing was like I was there on Thursday because Thursday is really slow. Like that's the day you could really take advantage of everything.
Yeah, preview night Friday, or whatever.
Yeah, Friday, they usually have, like, pretty big, like, events. And that's, for me, like, that's like, a big day. Saturday is just freaking psychotic. So I'm usually just there if there's, like, an important panel. And right after that, then I leave because I got to go.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I got 8 hours.
Nice.
Anyways.
But, yeah, let's jump to our first book, Joker, Harley, Criminal Insanity number 3 of 9. Man, I'm afraid of 9 issues because in this issue I feel like there's some stuff I feel like just didn't need to be there, and then I just feel like it's kind of prolonging the story. But DC Black Label Prestige. Harley Quinn follows the evidence and it leads her to a dangerous conclusion. She might know the truth. She might know the true identity of the serial killer she's hunting, but as Harley digs deeper into the Joker's past, he is watching her and leaving a trail of bodies in his wake. Gotham City has never needed a hero more. Now, we said this right before we started recording. The difference in this book being that Mike Mayhew was not on it was definitely felt, and it felt weird because of it. It felt like a completely different book. I know they are taking the route of, you know, the when we first started talking about this book, I said Criminal Minds, and you know, ever since you started watching Mindhunter, you can probably see.
Oh my gosh, I love that show so much. I'm actually depressed that there might not be a season 3.
But you know, I know they're taking that route, but knowing that the Joker is the killer and getting to know what's inside of his head and the way he thinks, I don't know if I like that.
Well, I mean, I'm always a fan of, which my wife always says that it worries her about me because she doesn't understand, like, how is it that I find, you know, getting into the mind of a serial killer and why does he do what he do? What are the motivations behind it?
Yeah.
To me, that's fascinating. So I appreciate, like, it doesn't matter to me that, I mean, when the book's called Joker Harley, I kind of already know that, you know, this is a very special duo.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's very dynamic. So this is just a different way. Instead of it being a psychologist, psychiatrist, now we have her as a profiler. So I don't mind knowing her, like, that she knows who and we know who the killer is. To me, what I find fascinating in this book is just how in-depth are they willing to go in terms of the psychology and, you know, Joker's why. Like, why is it the way that he is? Because, you know, something like with Mindhunter, because that show's being based on when they began studying, you know, serial murders.
Yeah.
Because they're using real life stories and real murderers in that TV show, and you know that's one of the shows, like the premise is like how can you stop crazy if you don't understand crazy. So for me, I absolutely adore this book. Now I will say that not having Mike Mayhew, because I'm kind of a nut when it comes to I love continuity, not only in story at times, but more in art, because I have a picture in my head of the world, and when there's like a disturbance within it, it kind of just like throws me off. Yeah. Now, I will say that in this story here, I didn't find Jason Bodwar's work as disturbing in certain areas. I feel like you noticed the presence more during Joker's moments, like when he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't sense it as bad during Harley sequences, like with her just wanting to make sure that she be her mom by not wanting to eat that piece of steak. And yeah. She literally sat on the chair for like 2 days until her mom just smashed her face into the plate. That one, like, I feel like those panels were stronger. And I was like, oh, you know what? I can feel like, all right, it's a knockoff, Mayhew,
yeah.
But not as bad. But it's kind of like also, you know, when I'm seeing like the show and I kind of see like, why is it that like, for example, like an Ed Kemper would end up killing people this certain way, and what did he do with the bodies after he was done? And just like the motivations for me, like all I'm thinking about are seeing the way that Joker, because now, yes, he is following Harley, and just seeing that the way he's killing people and he's killing these women and the way that he's kind of treating them, it kind of makes me wonder, like, where is he at? Because he's using kind of like very Renaissance paintings, you know, Salvador Dali with the clock and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I love it. I personally love this book. And although this is a very, very slow book, and in terms of progress, not much happens besides knowing that Joker is following Harley. But I feel like we've had remnants of that.
Yeah.
And this is just a little bit more of why Harley's messed up and why Joker's messed up, which we've kind of got that all. So it is a little repetitive, I guess you could say, if you want to look at a negative. But I just feel like the quality of the writing and all that that's, you know, like surrounding it, to me just makes it still very, very, very solid.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the visual aspect of how they're doing this as far as like the murders, which sounds really morbid, but to put that much detail into thought, you know, of how, you know, like I said, I was huge into Criminal Minds all the way up until season like 11 or 12. So I binged it in like a month back in the day.
Okay.
And I was super into it. And then I heard like the main character, one of the main characters who was actually from San Antonio, he got fired from it. And I was just like, he was.
Oh, kind of, Hotch?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I heard he was a douche.
Yeah, he. My uncle met him at the airport once, and it wasn't a great interaction.
Mm.
But then I was like, eh, you know, he's probably an actor that gets that a lot in the sense of like everybody always coming up to him. So I was like, eh, yeah. You know, whatever. But so I really dig this book, and I want to know more. I just don't want this to like turn into something that is going to, because like I said, you know, thinking that it was going to be only three, and then you said that it wasn't, I was like, okay, six, and you're like, no, it's nine. So to know that it's going to be this long, that's going to be over a year for us to finish. So
in that sense, yes, I can see what you mean. I think also when you're coming from the mindset of Criminal Minds, where Criminal Minds is like, you know, it's pretty much kind of like a solved case every episode. Unless it was like, what was it, like the Boston Strangler?
Yeah.
Is that the one that like petrified Hotch?
Yeah.
That he was like haunting him? Yeah, and that was like a really cool, like a 5-episode event.
Yeah.
That one was cool. Like that was, because I actually stopped watching after Gideon left.
Oh, wow, you stopped like at season 2 or 3.
Yeah, like, because I really loved Gideon, and then I saw like the episodes after, and I was like, I felt like Gideon was like the soul.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's the same thing that happened with Walking Dead. I haven't seen it since Rick. Because yeah. I felt like Rick was literally the heart that was holding the show when everything was falling. So, for example, myself, like, watching, like, the Mindhunter show. Mindhunter in, like, season 2, the one that just ended. You're literally seeing from, like, the 3rd episode to the 9th, them sprinkling in murders that were happening in Atlanta. and you would see him trying to figure out some crimes, but he'll end up back in Atlanta, and 29 African-American kids were murdered, and nobody can find the killer. Like, it was literally, like, 6-7 episodes of the same story. But to me, because the writing and the acting is so solid, I was totally fine, like, knowing that the first episode, the first season, all you're seeing is nothing but amazing actors portraying serial killers and getting to know what was their psychology.
Yeah.
In case this one was just the one that was so intense, and that happened in Atlanta, where I was like, oh my gosh. So I was okay knowing that a whole season pretty much is dedicated to one storyline without it ever losing the path.
Yeah.
But it just has to be good, though.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And, it has to be, like, gripping. If it's not gripping and it's just kind of... Because this can easily fall off the rails really quickly.
And one thing that I just thought of, I would hate for this to, you know, all be drawn out, and at the very end, Batman comes in. I don't think I want Batman in this book. Like, do you show him... They showed him in the past, and that's the reason for the... what's the kid's name? Jason, who turns into the Joker? Jason or Jonathan or whatever?
I think it's Jason.
His mother, of course, died in that car crash that was technically caused by Batman. Mm-hmm. So we know that Batman is in this world, but if Batman comes in the very end to, like, save the day, I'm not going to like that.
Oh, well, neither would I. I'm more curious on how is Harley going to turn? Or is she?
I was going to say, do you think this will end with Harley turning?
I mean, they've been teasing the narrative of both of their, you know, their upbringings. And how it's very similar one way or another.
Yeah.
But I just don't know. Is this going to be like a Bruce and Bane during, like, I Am Suicide, that because one had Alfred, he turned to be good, while the other one had no one, and, you know, he was in a Santa Prisca prison surviving all the time? I don't know. Like, are they just going to show kind of a correlation? Because the way that you see the Harleen book... by, I don't even know how to say his name, Stepchik Sejic, whatever. I mean, there you can kind of see, even though Harley is a psychiatrist at the time, and she's just really just trying to, like, you know, do her due diligence and her research, you can kind of sense a little crazy in her.
Yeah.
Like, you could see that it'll eventually get to that point. Here, you don't really see that, besides what they show in her... Or maybe you just have to be a little bit of crazy to want to get into this field. Yeah. So it's one of those... Yeah, it's... I don't know. I really enjoy it. And I kind of like where when they're teasing the next issue, and they have like a little paragraph where it says, like, when murder is your art, it's not enough to leave behind a body. The only true satisfaction lies in creating a display worthy of your genius. But elaborate crime scenes also lend themselves to analysis. While the GCPD might not find all the clues, forensic psychiatrist and profiler Harley Quinn is getting closer to the truth. Ah, jeez. Okay, I didn't like that teaser part. But I like the first part, because yeah. It's true. Like, that shows how elaborate they are. And
I really liked when they, what was it, like the second to last page or last page when they did the actual, like, analysis of... Mm-hmm. the serial killer, they actually went into detail, and it looked like an actual profile. So I like the attention to detail in this book.
Like, I actually want to know, what else does Kimi Garcia do?
Yeah, I would be interested in reading more of her stuff after this.
Yeah, like, because there's a part of me that wishes that she has something like this. Oh, sorry, Kimi Garcia. That there's a part of me that wishes that this is... that she has something, or man, I don't, you know what, let me not even say she, I don't even know if Kimi Garcia is a girl or boy.
Do you know? No, I don't.
I just know somebody named Kimi, and Kimi is a female. So I kind of just, okay, yes, it's a female. Phew! Okay, so yes, I kind of just wish that there's something like this in the independent, like in the indie scene.
Yeah.
Because then I feel that, you know, even though I feel like DC I still don't understand how DC shows this, but they don't show, but they have a problem with Bat PP. Like, this is literally people mutilated, and oh gosh, it drives me nuts. Anyways, hey, what did you think about Strange Adventures? Looks like it's getting the Black Label treatment, and they purposely put NC-17.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that part, but I'm interested. You know, there's a lot of rumors saying that his Bat-Cat is going to be Black Label, so that way they can kind of move forward with 5G whenever that comes out. But I'm okay with it. Now, I think I'll have to get used to the art, because like I like Mitch Gerard's. It's just the...
Excuse me, sir. It's a hard G.
Gerard.
Gerard's. Yeah.
Huh. I did not know
Get
that.
Get it right. Get it right.
But, you know, the like we were talking about, when we notice the art because the story is going a certain way. Now, hopefully my brain will say, hey, you know, you're seeing this from the very start. It's swapping off between Gerard's and Shaner.
Shaner.
So I'm hoping... Yeah.
That's a huge contrast.
Yeah, it really is. So,
yeah.
I'm excited for it, though. I was a big fan of Mr. Miracle, so I wasn't reading it as it was coming out. I read it when it finally came out to trade, so I'm looking forward to it.
Actually, one piece of advice when it comes to comic book conventions. If there's something that you really like, from a certain creator that you find out is going to be there, bring it. Make sure you bring it, because they're going to, when you get to that table, it's going to be more expensive than Disney World, where they have, like, you know, the Batman and Catwoman. They have, like, the wedding album. You could buy it right now on Amazon. You could buy it on any store. You could buy it for $8. They were selling it there for $50. Just because you're at the table, so it's, you know, it's like those impulses.
Yeah.
So things get jacked up big time.
Jeez.
So don't go like, oh, you know what, I have Justice League number one from New 52 because I know Jim Lee's going to be there and I want them to sign it. No, bring yours. Because you're probably going to spend, you know, you're gonna spend a pretty penny.
I'm trying not to spend any pennies and just go for the experience, Mark. Stop.
No.
Don't make me put more money into this than I want.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So that's why I'm telling you to bring your things.
Yeah, there will be. I feel like there will be an impulse buy if I don't do that. So I need to do some more research to see who's going, so that way I can bring some stuff for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you'll get more later on, but I mean, Jim Lee's been confirmed. George Perez has been confirmed. Joshua Middleton, if you've ever gotten any of his nice variants.
Ooh.
Yeah, he's going to be there. Yeah, well, there's so far it's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, and CGC is there in Florida. Ooh.
Yeah, so with CGC, all you would have to do is when you're going to get the autograph, you mention, because everybody has like their own little assistant, just let them know you want the CGC'd. Because before it would be, you know, you got to track one down and make sure that they follow you to get it signed. Now, I guess they've kind of organized that better.
Yeah.
So.
Sweet.
Anyways. So let's talk about, what was the next book you wanted to talk about?
Let's go ahead and jump into Batman 88.
Batman 88. Sorry, dude. With my internet, because of this tornado thing that I've mentioned to you, that I'm like in the middle of a tornado warning, and I have plastic chairs, like, flowing everywhere, my internet sucks, so I'm really worried of, like, finding solicits. So I don't know if you have the solicits, if you wanted to read them.
Yeah, I can read the solicits. It's not a problem.
Okay.
Cool. Batman 88, the conspiracy that will rock Batman's world, continues to unfold as the Dark Knight travels to Arkham Asylum to get answers from the Penguin. What dark secrets does he share with the Joker, the Riddler, and Catwoman? Plus, the plague of assassins descending upon Gotham City in its weakest moments continues. Will this be the moment when Deathstroke finally takes down Batman? Find out next time.
That was pretty good. I like that. I gotta say, I really liked this issue. I'm liking more and more the mystery surrounding. Like it felt like the first issue was kind of like, oh, this is typical James Tynion, but I'm liking more and more the issue, the story, and I'm liking the threats.
It seems
real.
I was very fearful that I wasn't going to like this because last issue we saw these assassins break out of the unbreakable prison.
Yeah.
And one thing that agitates me, you know, there's a lot of things that agitate me. You've learned that, and the listeners have learned that over the course of these past few months. But if you're going to design something that's unbreakable or unbeatable or, you know, something within that capacity, and they beat it or defeat it or break out of it in the next few panels with no explanation, that kind of bothers me. Because Batman said, this prison is basically made to hold me and my family. And so you're like, oh, crap, he's being serious. And then you find out in this issue that Penguin paid, you know, actual police officers to, you know, help them break out. So then I'm like, okay, so they didn't actually beat the prison. You know, they had help, whatever. But I really enjoyed the art here. Now, Tynion is keeping to his promise with the gadget in every issue. This one was a weird, like...
To activate the car.
Hologram car that creates a Batmobile whenever he needs one. Now, I thought it was really silly that Lucius's car was just so happened to be right there when Batman needed it.
You know, it fit the story.
Yeah, it fit the story. But, you know, it was, you know, cool, I guess. I think that, you know, it could come in handy. See, the one thing with him creating new gadgets for every issue, some of these gadgets that I really enjoy, if I enjoy them a lot, I want to see them again. It's not that I don't want to see a one and done type thing. So
the good thing with the gadgets is it's also a good way to, I guess you could kind of say like test, like what are fan reactions to see what works.
Yeah. So that other writers,
because I think, like, you know, maybe I don't know how many issues Tynion's going to be writing, but if six of them work, you can kind of add those to canon, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like this one, I mean, I thought that this was, like, it had a nice spot of humor.
Yeah.
With, you know, him ramming into, he's like, you know, this doesn't give you the same armor. Like, I thought, like, I'm like, okay, that's clever. But yeah, I think, like, the one thing it's not that I'm not liking, I'm just trying to figure out Riddler.
Yeah.
Because we know Riddler, after the gift, he never really technically got a gift from Luther. I guess he got the gift of finding out that the Riddler was a joke. And I guess he realized that as well. And now you just have kind of a hulkling, mutated, you know, Edward Nygma. And I feel like, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what made him get to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I find it, last issue, Tony Daniel made it a point for us to see, like, the spikes, like, on his back, where he looked like a stegosaurus. Here, you could kind of just see that he's a little bit more, you know, bulkier. And
well, like, in one of the issues, it said that he was taking some sort of military steroid to keep him awake for so long.
Yeah.
And so this has really messed with his mind or whatever, which I feel like is really weird. I honestly think and feel that after Tynion does this story with the assassins and the designer, which is, you know, something that we learned about last issue and is elaborating more on this issue, whenever he's done with that story, I think we need to go back to Riddler to find out what in the world happened to him. Because
I think Riddler deserves a one shot.
Yeah.
To kind of, you know, and also to give kind of like a bridge in between, you know, this arc and the next one. I'm enjoying the, you know, the tension going on right now that Selina is feeling because of something that she's, you know, a decision that she's kind of made, like a pact a long time ago with the designer, with all these villains. So I kind of like that because, in a way, I want to see what's Batman's reaction going to be. But then there's like moments that I don't feel like it's going to be too serious because I feel like that's going to contradict Batcat.
See, with King. And that's what I saw some reactions were. You know, that people were feeling kind of upset because it seemed like Tinian was teasing a clash between Catwoman and Batman.
There could be. I just don't think it's going to be major because that will utterly confuse people, even though Batcat is going to be, like you were mentioning, potentially Black Label.
Yeah.
I feel like that's just going to throw people off where you're just seeing one book is them together and it's all lovey-dovey and sexy. And then the other one is just, they're potentially on the verge of like a breakup kind of thing.
Yeah. So, and it's...
I will say that I loved Tony Daniels' Catwoman. Because Tony Daniel doing Catwoman on the first issue, what was it, 85? 86?
Uh-huh. 86.
86, yeah. I did not like the way that he was drawing Selina. I didn't like her style. Or maybe I'm just spoiled by the way Clay Mann draws her. maybe that's what it is, Clay Mann and, like, Mikhail Janin.
Yeah.
But there were many panels here that I was like, man, Selina looks great here.
Well, this is March. This is Gillian March. This isn't Daniels.
Oh, snap. Okay. Yeah. Wow, this doesn't even look like Gillian March.
Dude, Tony S. Daniel only did the first issue. March has done the last two.
But this doesn't even look like March's work.
He has improved a lot. The whole fight scene between...
Wait, is it the colors then?
I think it's the colors.
Oh, because it's Tomo Morey.
Yeah.
Okay. Because this doesn't look any different than Tony Daniel.
I mean,
but I think it's now okay. I get it. Then maybe it's that because Gillian March. I mean, if you see his work is very rough.
Yeah.
So that's why I was like, I mean, I don't always look at the creators.
You see a little bit more of Gillian's style in Batman a little bit, like in his face and the way he does the cape and stuff. I feel like
with the cape, but he also loves to do a lot of cross-hatching and mind blown. But yeah, it's got to be Morey.
I will say completely. Morey does an excellent job on colors, like always. Really
does.
Holy
crap!
Great.
I'm actually mind blown that this is not Tony Daniel.
Yeah,
because of just how clean this looks. It doesn't look like anything like March.
And it's weird that, they were really saying, oh, Tony Daniels is going to be the guy for Tinian on this run, and he's only done one issue so far.
Well, but I posted that on Twitter, like, day one of the announcement. I'm like, dude, this guy's going to last, like, three issues.
Well, I was telling somebody, I think that what they will do is Tony Daniels will be the beginning and ending of each arc. So that way it gives him time to, like, put out his best. Because if you look back at 86, 86 looks a lot better than anything he was doing in the middle of Tom King's run. Because it was put on a large, like, on a short deadline, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Tony Daniel falls along the line of, like, David Finch. Where you gotta love his... I mean, David Finch is kind of polarizing. But David Finch is so bad with deadlines that it's one of those things that when I hear Tony Daniel, I'm like, I'm only going to see him for an issue, maybe two.
Yeah.
But I'm thrown off. So knowing that this is, but yes, I love the threat. I don't know how much I feel about Harley jumping in here into the story. Mm-hmm. Sometimes to me, these are the kind of things that make me feel like, all right, this could be potentially editorial. Because they know, like, what timing with Birds of Prey coming out in the movies.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, hey, look, why don't... This is a flagship title. This gets the most purchases. Let's add her in there. Or it could be, we know that there's a mystery of the Joker there. And, Harley is one of those that should be able to know Joker more than anyone.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, I it's not that bad because I'm not always reading. I don't necessarily read Harley Quinn stuff. I just know that she's in everything. So, seeing her, I'm just like, oh god. Okay.
Well, you know, I can appreciate Harley outside of the Harley Quinn book, because from what I have talked to, when I talk to people who enjoy Harley Quinn, they always tell me there are two Harley Quinns in the DC universe. There's one in her actual solo title, and then one that is main, that is in main continuity, that is usually in something like Suicide Squad or this miniseries with Harley and Poison Ivy. You know, things that are hard concrete into continuity, while her solo title just does whatever the writer wants and kind of just goes all over the place. So
yeah,
if this, because this is a main continuity book, I can probably stand her a little bit more than I would attempting to read her solo title. So I feel like this will hopefully get a good part of the story in, but
okay,
and not just complete nonsense.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but let's go ahead and talk about a book that I didn't read, Lois Lane number 8. You know, I have not, like, we've been enjoying this story. There's been its ups and downs. I love every single cover for these books. I think the only one that I wasn't enthusiastic about was the tie-in with Leviathan. But these covers have been great. I love this color. This cover. I'm looking at it right now. Her, like, unbuttoning with the white Superman shirt underneath.
Yeah.
It looks great. But
yeah, no, it does. And also, even the variant has kind of like a little bit of an anime, like a manga.
Oh, really?
Vibe to it. Yeah, it has like a manga vibe to it, where it, where if you look at it, not in the sense, okay, let me, because I know that you're an anime guy and you're gonna be like all, you know, shill here. But when you look at kind of like the way that she's drawn, like I feel like I've seen.
Ooh, that is who is that?
And you have like the silhouette of kind of like the colors like going over like in as a cape form on, but I don't know why I feel like I've played games on PS2. I don't know if it was like Grandia or like Persona 3. I don't remember what it was, but there's kind of like a little bit of an influence with the way that she's drawn that I dig. Yeah. It.
I like that. I really like that.
Yeah.
Man, so, see, if they were to make a portfolio of just these covers, I would buy it. I would buy it for sure.
So but, to me, Lois Lane is a mixed bag. I mean, I think Lois Lane is kind of like a, kind of like a Harley, where you have one that's in continuity, one that's out. This one is kind of like you're either getting a main story or one that's kind of like off put. This one is more along the lines of being in the story, and I enjoy it. To me, I just feel like, when is Greg Rucka just going to get his like checkmate, you know, like book with like characters, because there's so many threads of what he's doing that he's done in the past with Checkmate that he's kind of like throwing it in here. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, I've enjoyed it. I just don't see, I don't see much progress, and I think that, again, I know I'm kind of like, you know, contradicting myself, because I'm okay with the slow burn with what's going on in like the Joker Harley book. Don't get me wrong, I actually really liked this issue. It's just I feel that this is now the third time that Lois has been attacked. And yes, this is a very grounded story. She's a journalist and she likes to get herself into muddy situations. So this is probably just the way that her life is, that she's always in that verge of getting killed. And yeah, this is kind of like, it's very evident. But this is now, I think, like the third time with her either sneaking away or meeting with Clark, or it's Clark kind of showing up, and now he's, in this case, instead of him just going in there and automatically getting all the attention, this was more her idea of him getting the attention so that she can leave with Renee. Now, Renee in the beginning with Lady Death and them fighting one another, I thought the action sequences looked good, although I'm okay with not having the banter of how hot each one of them are and how a relationship wouldn't work because, you know, Renee's not feisty enough.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, okay, like, you're trying to kill each other. Like, to me, those are, like, Fast and Furious moments. You know, like, you're having, like, okay, action that looks good, but you're just saying really stupid things in the middle of trying to kill each other.
Did you see that trailer for Fast 9?
No, I'm not gonna lie. No, I don't. I saw the first movie. I saw like halfway through the second, and I was done.
Okay, so Mark, I'm just gonna picture this. Okay, picture a car, a regular car, on its side, sliding on the road. Okay.
Okay.
Vin Diesel is standing on the door, so he's standing up while it's like a skateboard or a snowboard. Just think of it that way.
Okay.
A car pops up into the air towards him, and he catches it.
Wait, he catches a car?
Yeah. Or at least that's what it looks like in the trailer.
To me, like, seeing the trailer, like, when I saw that, like, Fast 9 was gonna do something during the Super Bowl, I was like, alright, this is the perfect time for me to, like, refill my chips and guac. You know, get my guac, get my, like, my queso blanco, get my refill.
And just, like, knowing that John Cena is gonna be playing his brother is just weird. Like, I know that I'll be dragged to go see that movie, whether it be because of my wife or because of my other co-host on Batman News Weekly that I work with. But, you know, it's just, I can't get away from those films. I really can't. And
I mean, they're mindless fun. I get it. It's just, I don't know. Like, usually my version of mindless fun is I like to just watch, like, stupid comedies.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, like, stupid comedies, 100%. Like, Step Brothers is one of my favorite movies. I love Dinner for Schmucks. Like, Dinner for Schmucks, like, to me, like, Dumb and Dumber. Like, yes, give Mr. Bean, give it to me. I can watch it all the time. So, I know that you always say, like, oh, you little pretentious movie. Okay, yeah, when it comes to, like, serious movies and stuff like that, I do. And even action.
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah. But to me, I mean, comedy is, like, on a completely different scale. But, and I'm like, hey, I'll be on. Like, I even like some Michael Bay films. Like, I'm not totally. But, like, for example, like, I like Michael Bay, the, like, 12 Hours. Like, you've seen, like, that Benghazi movie?
Yeah.
Like, I could see that. I could see that version of Michael Bay. And I like Transformers 1. I know nothing of Transformers. So, to me, at least the first one, it felt good.
Yeah.
Anyways, so, seeing Renee and Lady Death kind of, like, fighting, that's what I saw. I saw good action sequences with really crappy dialogue, in my opinion, and that's really what it was. It's more just following along the lines of what's going on with Lois. Yes, the story and the plot thickens a little bit, like, at the end, and I'm really curious what's going to be happening here now with at the terminal, but with Jessica Knight. But what I'm curious is that you see later on, if you've seen the solicits of what issue 9 is going to be, and it looks like you see Lois, it looks like it's, at least the cover, it's very political in regards to everything that's going on with children immigration in the cages, where you're just seeing a cover with Lois, with, you know, the colors that you've been seeing and that you've been liking, but with her kind of like on a picket fence. What are the fences that people climb all the time, like that schools have? Chain link fences?
Yeah.
Yeah, where you see her on one side of the chain link fence and you see, like, a whole bunch of children behind another side. So, I mean, at least cover-wise, it feels very political. So I'm kind of curious what that's going to bring. But overall, it's been still solid writing, good story. Well, for the most part, in terms of writing with this issue. But to me, I don't know why. I just feel like what you saw at the beginning. Or are you looking at the cover?
Yeah, I just looked at the issue number 9 cover. Looks okay. Nice.
Yeah. So what I'm seeing here is, I'm still trying to figure out a little bit of what's the identity of this book, and I feel like, wow, that's taken a long time to figure out. Yes, we always knew it. We always knew it was going to be a grounded story, a grounded tale, but I feel like this book has completely gone away from what happened at the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
With the mysterious person that, like, disappeared, and now it looks like she's going on a hunt for her, like, the maid, the housemaid that was always taking care of her house. Like, is she still following the thread of the missing journalist?
Yeah, yeah. You know, my big thing was at the end of issue one, when she got kicked out of the press conference, like, I was like, oh, this is going to be super political. Let's go there. Let's do that. And it has veered so far away from where we started, like you said. So I think there's been like three or four different stories to tell since then. And we're on issue 8. There's 4 more issues, and I don't think any of those 4 stories are going to be completely, like, answered.
Yeah, it's one of those stories that it's just, you know, normally books have a certain niche, and sometimes the stories that are really tight is when they stick with their niche.
Yeah.
Instead of having, like, a buffet where you're not really good at anything, but everything is pretty, like, it's passable. Everything is good, but yeah, Nothing is great. That's kind of like what I'm getting with Lois Lane, is I'm just getting a buffet of, like, good threads, but at the end of the day, it was kind of like, oh, man, but I really wish they had this.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm with you. Issue 1 was really strong. I was like, man, this book is going to be potentially, like, award-winning. And then it's just every issue kind of just throws in something completely different that I don't really necessarily know what I'm reading or what... I don't even know sometimes, like, what I like. Like, what am I liking in this book? Because it's hard to pinpoint.
Yeah.
But anyways,
let's move on to Justice League 40, because I have some things to say about it. Justice League number 40, the next chapter of comics premieres, Super Team begins. An unexpected arrival from the stars brings a dire warning to the Justice League. A new breed of conquerors is in on the march, led by Superman's enemies. Or Superman's nemesis, Eradicator, a genetically engineered superpowered strike team has come to subjugate Earth. To aid the Justice League, Batman makes the unprecedented decision of enlisting an ancient, unrivaled power, which calls into question who exactly is in charge. With the League on unsure footing, will they be ready to save the world? I could not read that at all. Holy crap. So this book opens up with a discharged Lantern coming in, beating the crap out of everybody, and I can't remember his name, but John immediately recognizes him. He's a Daxamite.
Yeah, it's a Sodomian.
Yeah. He's a Daxamite, and so of course he has majority of all the powers of Superman. And the writing was a little silly, for sure. Like, whenever Superman was like, let's fight fire with fire, I was like, oh god, this is what we're getting now. Okay. But my biggest thing is Vendetti contradicted himself with continuity within one page of each other. Did you notice that?
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, I posted it on Twitter. Yeah, I was just kind of like asking the question, is it me or is Justice League 40 kind of like all over the place in terms of continuity? Now, for the most part, see, this is the thing. With continuity, I mean, I'll put it again for those, if anyone's new listening to this episode, I'm okay with loose threads in continuity. I'm okay with it. What I'm not okay with when it comes to this specific book is when you're going so out of your way to tell me that this book is at this part, at this point of, you know, like the DCU, and then everything in there is kind of contradicting it. I was like, I don't know. It's one of those things that you're kind of putting your foot in your mouth.
Well, I saw that Eric from Weird Science message or replied to you, but he's telling the truth, because this book does.
This book is very tight in terms of what we're reading right now in the DCU.
Yes,
it is very tight. The problem is that everything that this book should be happening, this book is happening at a time much way before what's happening right now at the DCU.
Yes, he said, Snyder said before his run, this is going to take place, but unfortunately, it takes place in the middle of his run. Because if that was the case, Bendis's run should take place before Snyder's, but it took place after, in the middle, and in the beginning. And then, it's confusing myself just thinking about it. But let's go ahead and say it. So, Bruce goes and tries to find Madame Xanadu, because, of course, the Eradicator and all of the other Daxamite followers that he has are going to come and try to conquer Earth. So they try to find somebody who, because Daxamites aren't weak against Kryptonite, they need to find somebody who is very strong with magic. And Wonder Woman says, well, why don't you find Madame Xanadu? Batman says, okay, I'll do it. He goes and he flies off and he talks to Alfred. And my immediate thought is, okay, well, this takes place before Snyder's run. So,
see, to me, I thought that this was actually a flashback. I think that this was Venditti's way of trying to remind, because it seems like many people have been very subtly reminding you that Alfred is dead. So because of just the colors of having the red screens and you're kind of just seeing, because here you're having autopilot return to Batcave, but in the middle, he's immediately going towards Alfred. And then in the third, it says autopilot engage. So I feel like this is just a moment that instead of him normally talking to Alfred to kind of plan the coordinates or, hey, get me to this location, now it's just he's speaking to like a red screen. So I took this part as a flashback. Now, I could be reading it wrong.
See, I saw it as him talking to Alfred. Like, Alfred is there.
Okay.
So because of that, Alfred is there. So I'm like, okay, this is before Snyder's run. So this makes sense. Now, we move forward. John Stewart and Superman are talking. And John Stewart says, oh, yeah, you revealed your identity. And I'm like, wait a minute. Superman shares his identity after the events of the whole You're the Villain, Doom Sigil, like all that stuff. He did it afterwards.
Oh, of course, because, I mean, that would explain when he made the claim, the entire Legion of Dooms together, you saw their... I mean, you saw, like, the reaction. I mean, that
Lex,
team was formed.
Lex was in his Apex Predator form, and he turned back into normal Lex. And then, immediately after they have that small conversation about his identity, John says, oh, well, you know, Batman just isn't himself because Alfred is dead. And you're like, what? We just saw him talking to Alfred. What is going on? Like, that...
Honestly, what ruined this book is the fact that Snyder mentioned that this was before his run.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, all Snyder had to do was ignore that tweet. Because then you could just take this as...
Well, I will say... we have, I don't know if you are a mutual on him on Twitter, but from the Squadcast, Brent, he asked Venditti himself, hey, do I need to read Snyder's run to read yours? And Venditti said, no, you don't need to read his, but it's a good run anyway. I would say pick it up. So he's encouraging people to read that before reading his. Or at least picking it up, you know. Like,
well, I mean, I think he's just doing it to support Snyder in buying the book, you know, help him with money and whatever. I mean, you want to support the writers.
That's true.
But I think that this is more... I don't know. It's just I came into this book with an expectation in terms of, like, all right. It's not even an expectation because I knew this book was going to be kind of like just a safe book in between. Like, let's just have, like, a cool story. To get to, you know, the crisis, the spiritual metal, whatever it's going to happen, the death metal thing. But to me, I don't know, just hearing those words, everything else just threw me off. And I got to say, talking about the Squadcast, Jordan, like, I had no idea. I mean, I don't normally do, like, the Patreon stuff or anything like that, but I just find really, like, I had no idea because, you know, normally Jordan and Chris are very, like, positive. I know they've had their words with, like, King and stuff, but, man, Jordan, this guy on a DM, this guy's hilarious. Like, he hated this book. Like, he... I was like, man, I didn't even know Jordan knew how to curse. Like, that's just... That's, like, I thought it was, like, with it when you know how you were confused, when I'm like, dude, you can curse if you want, and you just thought you couldn't just because I normally don't?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of, like, the same vibe. I was completely shocked with the DM conversation that I was having.
Oh, Jordan is hilarious. I love Jordan. He's such a great guy.
Exactly. And even, like, Kevin. And I know you and Kevin, you guys have your history. And I got to be honest, I really missed, since we don't have the website anymore, I missed the back and forth between you guys. So yesterday was beautiful. I felt like that felt my spiritual tank, which not right now I'm all over the place with what's going on personally. But even he was confused. And I felt like even if he was confused, he would just still say, like, hey, this book's amazing or something. But no, even he's like, no, I don't even know what I feel. Like, this completely threw me off my game. So I feel like even when, like, the mega optimists are kind of thrown off with something, I feel like, okay, I don't feel, like, really strange.
Maybe it's just, you know, a rocky start, hopefully. And I say hopefully. I don't know how long this Venditti run is going to be. There hasn't been any announcements for it, but I assume that it'll go on through Snyder's Metal when it finally comes out. So we probably have this all the way through the summer.
And again, I like Venditti. I like Venditti as a writer. I was just thrown off with comments, and I feel like when you know that continuity is all over the place, I just feel like it's important to just not say those things because you're. I feel like Venditti was given it was kind of like a disservice.
For sure. For sure. And, you know, we do get a little bit, you know, like Eric was saying to you on Twitter, we do have a lot of things that Venditti is trying to connect tissue with. You know, Flash is having trouble with his speed in his book. So, you know, they address it a little bit here. And, you know, Flash being the optimistic, like, hey, there's nothing wrong with me kind of guy, he proves it by, you know, using his power. So, I like that Venditti is trying to be like, hey, I'm going to be the guy that will put all of continuity together. Yeah. I like that he's attempting it. I just think that he needed a little bit more time to flesh it out. So, I'm optimistic, you know, because of that first 12 issues on Hawkman, I know Venditti has a good story. Because of the 12 issues of Freedom Fighters, I know Venditti has a good story for Justice League. I don't know how long it's going to take.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to, I was worried because I'm having more Amber Alerts now, saying nice. That I'm having, like, flood warnings. I'm like, awesome, because so far, since we've been recording, 3 tornadoes have touched down.
Holy crap.
About, like, 9 miles from here.
Why aren't you running to your storm cellar or whatever you have over there? Like, I would be freaking out.
Because all I have to do is, like, Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt. I'll just grab a belt, like in Twister, and I'll connect myself to I'll connect myself to, like, some kind of metal bar or something so that I can see the inside.
Well,
the heart of the tornado she always wanted to see.
If you see a hose just flapping in the wind, don't grab it.
No. Look, I just saw a cow.
No, I'm joking. I think that's the same cow.
That's a great movie. That movie is so stupid. But see, like, I can like stupid movies, but I think it's... Oh, I think, man. 90s get a pass. 90s get a pass because it has, like, it hits my childhood nostalgia.
Oh, man. I haven't seen Twister in so long, though. I wouldn't mind watching that again. Oh, man.
Well, it's just, like, it's always nice to see, like, hippie Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah. Because
he's the trucker.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he's, like, the funny, the little trucker guy. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm just having Amber Alerts going all over my, my phone.
With that, guys, I want Mark to be safe, so remember that we are a part of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Go check out their website. I recently subscribed to about four or five of their shows. Don't know when I will have time to listen to all that, but I'm hoping to put it in my playlist for work today. And you know where to find us. Comic Book Legion is going to be CB_Legion. I'm going to be at Fanboy Clay. Mark is at
Mark Reads Comics.
I almost forgot that. Holy crap.
Don't tweet much anymore, so it's okay.
But yeah, with that, guys, I think we're gonna call it a day, and we will see you guys next week.
Sweet. See ya.
See ya.